Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with New York City-based jazz saxophonist Owen Broder on the 2022 CD Hodges Front and Center Volume 1. We cover the release of this album, COVID life, the overall jazz community, and so much more. As influential as he's been on the history of jazz saxophone, Johnny Hodges is usually discussed in the light of his key role with Duke Ellington's orchestra. On this new album, Owen shifts the spotlight to focus more intently on the legendary altoist. It's due out on October 14th, 2022, via Outside and Music. This album represents a very new horizon and a world to explore live music and so much more as the world wakes up. Enjoy this interview.
I think the last time we spoke was well before the pandemic, and what a different tapestry that's put on everything in the world and being a musician, and especially in the jazz community.
Right. I think we spoke about the American Roots Project. Is that right?
Yes, that was it.
Great. Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I was just going to say thanks for having me back. I'm looking forward to speaking with you.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's interesting because, you know, the cover immediately popped out to me, and the way that it was packaged, the CD broke in the mail, and I really wanted to hear it, so I reached out. Yeah, well, I got a digital copy, so I'm good, but I just remember, you know, getting it and thinking, you know, this is one that I was ready to pop in the CD player, because I'm still old school like that, which is weird to say, you know, but at any rate, this project is fascinating to me because Johnny is really kind of seen as the guy with Duke, and there's always kind of an asterisk next to his name instead of him being the soloist. But before we get to that, we've already kind of touched on it. How did you survive the pandemic, and how relieving is it now to have an album coming out with the possibility of performing live?
A pandemic obviously was a new world for all of us. I do count myself quite lucky that I was able to sink my teeth into a project that was really fulfilling and kept me very busy for a majority of it. I started and worked with an organization called Live From Our Living Rooms that over the course of three multi-day series raised $140,000 in support of musicians who had been put out of work by the pandemic. And so over those different series, we put together virtual concerts, masterclasses, and industry panel discussions for people to tune into from all over the world. So that was a big project that, you know, made us feel good about what we were doing with that time and was able to help a lot of people. And then coming out of it, I almost immediately as things started to kind of open up, my partner started teaching at a university out in Portland, Oregon. And so I started doing a couple adjunct positions, teaching saxophone at one school and jazz related courses at another in Portland, Oregon. And it is very exciting to have this new record coming out. This was recorded in September last year. So again, just kind of right on the heels of the pandemic. And that on its own was a rewarding experience, just to spend 2 days in the studio with some good friends and fantastic musicians making this music that I've been listening to for a very long time. And to have it come out now is a really rewarding feeling. And we're looking forward to an exciting 9-day tour starting at the end of October.
So before we get into this album, and obviously you've probably studied and read up on Johnny in a very extensive way, we probably need to clear something up because there's conflicting reports about this. Where did the rabbit, where did the nickname come from? From what you know, how did that happen?
Great question. So there are two kind of prevailing theories. One is that, on gigs, he would, when the band would get fed dinner, he would just eat lettuce, plain. No lettuce, nothing else, just plain lettuce. And so that's one theory. And the other is that, on stage, he was so stoic that reminded people of, you know, just kind of watching that stoicism of a rabbit. So that's, those are the two prevailing theories.
So the one thing that happens when you go into a deep dive on something is you discover things that are surprising, that you just never realized. What is it about the world of Johnny Hodges that you discovered that surprised you, that you stepped away and thought, I had no idea that was the case?
Honestly, just the breadth of his own catalog as a band leader. You know, as you mentioned, he's so well thought of as Duke Ellington's lead alto saxophone player, you know, functioning as the lead alto player in a saxophone section in a large ensemble. But the amount of work that he's done outside of that band on his own with a number of other jazz luminaries who are themselves not associated with Ellington, that was a really fun aspect of his work and his music that that I hadn't really sunk my teeth into until digging into this project.
So how is it that you take that body of work that he has and simmer it down to what you're going to put on your album? How did you do that?
So in kind of sifting through all of the many, many tunes and records that he made and recorded, one of the interesting things that I found was he certainly gravitated towards the blues form. Johnny Hodges loved to play the blues. And in putting together this project, I wanted to balance that out with some of the other song forms that he explored, you know, some of the 32 bar forms, you know, rhythm changes and otherwise, and to kind of create a balance and highlight the many, kind of avenues of composition that Johnny Hodges recorded himself. And so a lot of those ended up being, I think we kind of collected a nice balance of tunes. Certainly there are some blueses on there. Royal Garden Blues is an interesting one that kind of, I think, even in the context of being a blues, adds some variety because halfway through the tune, it modulates to a new key, kind of adding a fresh harmonic territory. And then among the other tunes are songs that he was well known for recording with the Ellington Ensemble. And then other standards like I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter that certainly isn't thought of as a Duke Ellington tune or even a Johnny Hodges tune, but Johnny Hodges came up with this great arrangement. And, you know, zooming out a little bit, I think, you know, one of the connecting tissues between all of the songs he chose to record, is that so much of his music is so joyful. You know, it's just got a lot of kind of joy in it. And I wanted to balance that out with some of these really hauntingly beautiful ballads that are recorded by Billy Strayhorn, some of which, again, are kind of thought of as songs associated with Ellington's band, like Star-Crossed Lovers. But then one of my favorite songs on the project is called Ballad for the Very Tired and Very Lonely Lotus Eaters. And it's just some of the most beautiful harmony you'll hear on a tune. I think a lot of it, you know, includes colors that you could associate with modern, you know, contemporary jazz harmony. With all of those tunes and the goals kind of in mind, we were able to piece together a nice balance of repertoire.
So just a little bit of trivia. The album comes out on October 14th, and I'm interested in this time period because my birthday's on the 13th, and I'll be 50 this year. But
hey,
I've been watching. Yeah,
I know you happy. Happy early birthday!
Thank you. I'm in the Half Century Club. But the thing about it that's interesting is that I was watching a show on HBO, and this has been some years back, called The Leftovers, and it's about the Rapture, and it had that dude that was married to Jennifer Aniston for a while, Justin. Oh man, I can't remember his name. Can't remember his last name, but he was the central character, and it's all about the Rapture and about who was taken and who was left behind. But the day of the Rapture is October 14th.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So it's like, I remember when that happened, I was like, how weird would that have been if they would have picked October 13th and that's my birthday? So I always think, you know, it's just one day after my birthday, but it's kind of cool that, you know, it's interesting trivia for the release of this album. So
Right. I actually know that show, The Leftovers, with Justin Theroux. I like that one.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a great show. But, yeah, that was the day, and I always remember that. And I was like, wow, you know. So,
sounds like you dodged a bullet.
Yeah, well, you know, and if I don't, and it happens, I've made it to 50, and I'll be able to, like, actually, you know, listen to your album before everything goes down.
Love it. Thank you, man.
So it's all, there's a lot of drama going into this. But at the end of the day, you know, the jazz community, I think, like all of the other communities, really got held back more than anybody else during this pandemic. I mean, there was stadiums that were full and all of this, but you just couldn't do it. I get it. The horn throws, all of these particles in the air and all of that. But honestly, when you look right now at this very day, you have an album coming out, the chances for a live show, you just talked about a tour. This has to be like a phoenix rising. This has to be really, really feel good that we're in another place right now.
It does. It does. It's exciting to see the world open up and see musicians getting back to what they do. And, you know, on the receiving end of that, it's exciting. You know, just being able to go to clubs and see people from all over bringing their music, you know, to different parts of the world. And it's just a good thing all around. I think people are still kind of in the place where we're not yet taking for granted what we've gotten back.
You know, the one thing I noticed, I ramped up and did more interviews than I ever did before over the pandemic, and I noticed that there was people that just had to walk away because you have to live, or people went to other parts of the world to explore surfing because they just don't know what's going to happen next. But then there's the jazz community that's here right now, and colleges are still full of kids that are wanting to learn jazz. So my question to you, from your vantage point, being a part of this community, how do you see kind of the coming back of the jazz community, the revitalization of this art form in true reality? How do you see that happening right now?
I think that's a great question and a multifaceted one. I think in a lot of ways, jazz musicians, you know, during the pandemic, like you mentioned, you know, we've all kind of gained some new skills, whether that's, you know, self-recording or, you know, something completely unrelated, coding, for example, or whatever. You know, we've all kind of found these ways to become more self-reliant, you know, as if jazz musicians weren't expected to do enough on our own anyways. We've gotten these new skills that kind of expand our breadth of activities. And we're putting them to use now. You know, we learned a bunch of new things, and now we're applying them to, you know, what we're getting back to as our daily lives. A lot of musicians have these kind of reliable sources of income, whether that's, you know, creating content for their Patreon pages, or, you know, a new teaching job in my case, or otherwise, you know, we've kind of figured out a way to create a stable career or move towards, you know, creating a stable career while continuing to make the music that we're here to make, you know. And I think we're finding, if we haven't already found it, we're continuing to find that balance between doing what we need to do to live the lives we want and continue to make the music that we want to make. So for me personally, as I mentioned, I started teaching at a couple of universities, and you know, it's there are classes that I like. I'm teaching jazz theory and ear training, and jazz arranging, and teaching a jazz combo and private lessons, and all of that at a school that is fortunately very accommodating to my work as a, you know, creative artist, you know, someone who's continuing to record and perform and tour. So it's kind of an ideal situation, being able to do something that I like that supports the creative activities that I want to pursue, and giving me the flexibility to do that. And I think we are all, as a music community, kind of moving towards that, just, you know, continuing to find ways to support ourselves and do the things that we want to do as creative artists.
So in our effort to keep the lights on, I want to touch on a couple of things here that we've already mentioned. Outside of Music is releasing your brand new album, Retrospective on Johnny Hodges, on October 14th, and you said you have a tour coming up. So if you could let everybody know the best place to pick the album up and stream it, and a little bit more about you and this tour before we go, that'd be great.
Sure. So the album will be available on all streaming platforms, of course, and if you'd like to do your part in supporting recorded music, you can pick up the album in its physical form as a vinyl or as a digital copy on Bandcamp, on my own Bandcamp page, or on my website, owenbroder.com. And the tour will be taking this music on the road, starting in D.C. on October 25th, working our way through the Northeast region and then taking a couple days off and then kicking off the West Coast leg on November 3rd, starting with Seattle's Earshot Jazz Festival at the Royal Room, and then closing out the tour on November 6th in Portland, Oregon at the 1905. And, of course, we'll be doing what I like to think of as our hometown release show in New York City on October 26th at Chelsea Table and Stage.
You know, Carrie Polster, I just talked to her the other day, and she mentioned the 1905, and somebody had a tattoo, and she was just referencing how cool it is there, but she has no idea why it's called the 1905.
I'm with her on that. So, I do not know where it came from.
Yeah, and she doesn't either, and she just like a mystery to me when you said that. But, Owen, this has been great, man. Thank you for taking time out. It's great to catch up with you. Good luck with the album. It's wonderful. Good luck with the tour. It's so great to be on this end of things and to hear the exuberance and the joy of a musician being able to do what they natively love to do. So I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Really appreciate you having me, and great to talk to you and catch up.
Absolutely. And, you know, we'll have to do this down the line here, but I'm going to tell you right now, when I think about that show in a rapture, I used to think, what, you know, there's no way. But now, after we've lived through these last 2 years, anything can happen.
That's right. I think you're right about that.
So if people start getting sucked up into the air the day the album's released, just turn up the speakers, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Beautiful. Owen, thank you, man. Good luck with everything. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Take care.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Portland, New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Owen for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino on the iTunes Store. Visit neonjazz@youtube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.